this pilot.
All right. If you could make money any way possible, but it can't be through a job, how do you think you would do that?
Marry rich?
Well, lucky. No, not lucky. I'm not rich. Hello and welcome to the second episode of Humodity. I'm Ethan and I'm here with my wife, Steph. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
I am good. Back by popular demand, a lot of our mates listen, your dad listen, and everyone thinks you are very funny. They have very little feedback about me.
Yeah. When are you recording the next one? Now.
Yep. So it's really exciting. So I've got a really cool concept this week. So I've found some people that have made money in really odd ways. And how I wanted to do this is like not just rattle off a list, but sort of treat this as like an odd Moneymakers Anonymous, because I feel like if these people met in a room, I think their heads would explode at the ideas that they came up with to make money. You know what I mean?
I'll find out.
Because you have no idea what I've got yet.
No idea.
Here's the first person. Let's just make up a person for this one. Imagine he's walking into the Odd Moneymakers Anonymous and he says, "Hello, my name's John."
Hi, John.
So John would explain that he made his money doing a dance marathon. Now, this was actually a bit of a thing in the 1930s because people loved to dance and there was a bit of taboo around it. I don't know if you know that, but like it was, you couldn't dance in public and stuff.
There was a dancing plague.
Yeah, there was a dancing plague. You love your dancing plague. The dancing plague is pretty crazy.
That wasn't done by humans, though. That was
like a bug, wasn't it?
A disease, yeah.
That is a crazy story. But what I think is crazier about this is that it wasn't people just dancing involuntarily. People signed up for this and probably danced for even longer periods of time. These dance marathons were like thousands of hours long.
Jesus.
So like in the Depression, obviously, the Depression hit, people were really poor. And this was a way to earn yourself some money to go and enter one of these dance contests. You could go in and just dance and dance and dance. And if you out-danced everyone else in the competition, you would win. This is up your alley, hey?
What kind of dancing?
Well, this is where it gets a bit confusing because I think the rules are that as long as you're still moving, you're technically dancing. So you're only disqualified if your knees touch the ground. So people would actually just get to the point where they were so exhausted where they would just walk. So they were eventually called walkathons. These were actually banned, but then if you called them walkathons, oh, it's just people walking, so it's fair game again. So we'll host these walkathons.
Boring.
Yeah, like a little bit. Not so boring. The really odd part is that it was like partner dancing. These people were so exhausted, but they got so good at being able to like pass out and fall asleep mid-competition. So there's all these photos of men or women holding up their partner while they're just like floppy, lifeless, trying to get some rest during the competition.
Surely that would be disqualification.
No, the knees didn't touch the ground. And also they're still technically moving, as is their partner.
Yeah, but they're not awake.
Yeah, but that's, apparently this is just a thing. Like there is literally, I'm looking at photos now of just like couples just flailing around their like corpse looking partners. Look at this.
Oh my God.
Can you believe it?
That one guy's knees are very close to the ground. And yeah, but she looks pissed about it.
She's like, is she pissed that he's just not putting enough effort into the dance or that she's desperately trying to win it? Or is she, oh my God, he is so heavy.
He's just death glaring the camera.
Actually, she is. We'll have to put that up as maybe a bibliography or a reference page for my one reference for this one. but it, not only that is the so obviously that's the crazy part is the dancing part of it, but there's also like drama involved. They'd have like a an MC hosting it. They'd have actors come in and try and make fake drama between the couples, and there were also choreographed dances. Where the MC would be like, okay, here's your chance to rain silver on the contestants. So people would throw coins at them at these parts.
Oh my God.
It's so wild. Like, it's like Love Island, but just on steroids.
I think they did this on Gilmore Girls.
Really?
I believe so.
Was it like, does it sound this crazy? Because the Gilmore Girls is, oh no, I keep getting the Gilmore Girls messed up with the Golden Girls. The Gilmore Girls is a pretty cool, like, sort of dramedy thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
While the Golden Girls is like a really old and daggy sitcom. So, okay, the Gilmore Girls would be kind of interesting. Okay, so the other rule is, now I think this is piss weak. You're allowed a 15-minute break every hour. You're non-stop.
You don't even get that much at work.
I know. You're non-stop for 45 minutes and you get a 15-minute break where all the partners would be separated and be like given like a little cot for 15 minutes and an air horn would blast. These people would literally pass out on the cots. And then another air horn would go off and they'd have to get back up and dance.
Surely it would be easier to go get a job.
Well, here's the thing. This sounds like a lot of work, right? The prize, roughly about $500.
What's the equivalent of that today, though?
That is a good question, but the answer is not enough. Because honestly, look, the downside is because it's the Great Depression, it's very hard to get a job. So $500.
$500 in the 1930s?
Yeah.
Roughly just under $9,000 today.
That's not enough.
How long are they dancing for?
These things can last thousands of hours.
Yeah, but I work a lot of hours.
Yeah, but you get a break and you get to come home to your loving husband, of course, and have a sleep. And have recreational time, like this recording the podcast. You get a life. You don't just have to relentlessly dance.
I guess.
You have freedom in this world.
Yeah.
These people do not. They're desperately dancing to feed their family.
Yeah, okay.
So that's John at Odd Money Makers Anonymous. The next person he's going to meet, similar time period, is a man named Mr. Martin. So Mr. Martin's going to come up to the front of Odd Money Makers Anonymous. Hi, I'm Mr. Martin.
Hi, Mr. Martin.
Hello. So this guy, similar sort of time period, actually a bit earlier, much more lucrative this one, right? So Mr. Martin understood there was a lot of money in sports betting, particularly horse racing, obviously, right? This guy fabricated a horse race meet.
How can you fabricate?
So obviously, like, there's a bunch of racetracks around England. People go to them and bet on the horses. But because they're not televised and there's no radio back then, you're not entirely going to be sure when a race meet is and at what time. The papers are your best resource for that. So there's not like a whole lot of reliable communication on horse racing. So this guy just says, what if we just made up a racetrack and a bunch of horses, and then we would know who won. So he comes up with Trodmore, favorite name for a race course. So he rings up this this newspaper and says, look, we've got a race meet. I'd love you to cover it in your paper. It's for the Trodmore race course. And he's like, shows him all the horses, and he's like, oh, this looks really good, actually. Oh, this looks like a really good race. I'm definitely going to cover this in our paper and all the results. And they're all like, yes, we're in. So then, of course, they give him the horses that are in it and the odds. They're trying to just make it look pretty realistic.
Mm.
But because they made it up, they also made up the winner of the race, and they all just bet on the winner.
Right.
But the winner's not real.
How many is they?
I think there's like a few of them in the scam, but this Mr. Martin guy was obviously the
ringleader.
The ringleader, yeah. So they actually never got caught, but they did unravel that Trodmore was a load of bollocks. So they posted their like results in the paper 24 hours later. The winning horse was given like 5-1 odds in one paper, but it was 5-2 odds in another newspaper. So then they rang each other and they were like, oh, can we just like get this right? I think there's a discrepancy here. Let's ring the race course. So they rang it. And then, of course, they were like, there is no such thing as Trodmore. These guys actually made it out with £100,000 back then, which is a huge amount of money.
Far out.
So you're Googling how much that's worth now.
Of course I am.
So the guy that did the dance contest, how do you think he'd feel about hearing about Mr. Martin?
Pretty upset.
Yeah.
But also I feel like he doesn't have a brain anymore because he's been dancing for thousands of hours.
Yeah, he probably is pretty apathetic about it. But having said that, if I found out that someone did literally something like that and got away with it, and I had to dance my ass off for $500, are you kidding?
Was it 19...
1898.
1898.
100,000 pounds. I think it's like $1 million.
It's a fuck ton of money.
So I think these two people are going to be blown away by the next Odd Money Maker Anonymous. This man is going to walk up and say, "My name is D.B. Cooper."
Hello, D.B. Cooper.
That's not his real name, apparently. But that's how they actually identify this person. Because, once again, it's a person that got away with what they did. And what they did was hijack an airplane.
Jesus.
Yeah. So this was actually pretty common a long time ago before, like, security gates and, you know, check-ins, and you could actually bring a lot of stuff on a plane and get away with it. There was just nowhere near as much security then as there was now. Like, here's a bit of a stat for you. Let's have a look. So from like 1961 to 1967, there was only like 9 hijackings of US commercial flights, apparently. But then in 1968, the number went up to 17, and then 40 in 1969.
Wow.
A lot of it was people just hijacking and they wanted to go to Cuba. It's actually pretty sad because there were migrants that just wanted to go back home. So there's a bit of like empathy for them. But eventually, like, they were actually advising hijacked passengers to relax because most Cubans are indeed friendly and will make your layover as comfortable as possible. So this was a common thing, but this is really crazy. This is one of those people that didn't go to Cuba when he hijacked the plane. So this person, right, they get on the plane, they order a bourbon and soda and just sort of chill there for a bit. But then he pulls a stewardess over and gives her a note indicating that he has a bomb in his briefcase and she has to sit down with him. The stewardess was like, okay, fine. Apparently this thing had a massive wires and like colored sticks and stuff, and it looked like there was a genuine bomb in there. So this person demanded 4 parachutes and $200,000 in $20 bills. They landed the plane. They released like 36 hostages, put the money on board with the parachutes. The plane then went back up in the air and he jumped out with the money. And he got away with it. They couldn't find him.
How do we know that he didn't die?
Well, there is like a belief that that's happened. Like, the FBI have stopped allocating resources into the investigation. He could have died. He could have got away with it. No one really knows. But they have found like banknotes that match the serial numbers from what was stolen, and it's like all, you know, destroyed and stuff. So you don't know. Maybe he got away with some of it. Maybe he perished. I don't know. Pretty wild though, hey?
Yeah.
And then literally not long after, there was a guy named Martin McNally who tried to do the same thing, and he'd never parachuted before. He did it, completely cooked the landing, and he just looked so battered that it was just so obvious that it was him once he reached civilization. So
I feel like the old guys doing the horse racing is still the smartest one.
Yeah, there's a lot less effort in that.
A lot less effort.
And it is way classier.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a phone call. But then again, this guy's literally just sitting there cross-legged with a whiskey on a plane saying, just run this note up to the captain. He didn't really have to do much other than jump out of a plane.
Yeah.
People pay to do that.
That's true.
Now, all of these people are going to lose their minds at this person, right? Because this is one of the craziest things to wrap your head around from someone pre-internet.
Mm.
So this person is going to walk up and say, "Hello, my name is Alex Chu."
Hello, Alex Chu?
Yeah, I guess. Sorry if I pronounced your name, if the members of Odd Money Makers Anonymous have pronounced your name wrong. But anyway, it's still a super interesting story. So this person is in the business of selling pixels on a screen.
Okay.
Yeah. He created this idea called the $1 Million Homepage because he wanted to fund his education, right? So he arranged a bunch of pixels on a homepage in a 1,000 by 1,000 grid and sold each pixel for a dollar. But if you sell each of those pixels, that adds up to $1 million.
My God.
Yeah.
When was this?
This was like 2005. This was a very long time ago. But there's literally a giant picture of it. So you could actually like buy your chunks of pixels and put a little picture on it. And this it's just this like giant colored wall. Have a look at that.
What was this on?
$1 million homepage.com.
But why?
I mean, why not? Like logistically, it happens a lot with national parks and even stars. Like people will pay a fee for like a square meter of land or like a constellation, which is pretty odd in itself. But the philosophy behind buying a single pixel on a website, you know what I mean? Like that is just... Your face right now is exactly what theirs would look like. You don't get it, do you?
No, but hey, make money.
If you could buy enough pixels to like have a message on that board, what would you want to say on it?
I wasted my money.
That's brutal. You would buy the entire thing and say, don't buy a single pixel, and you would spend $1 million on that.
I mean, I wouldn't, personally.
Is that what you would spend your money on if you invented Trodmore Racecourse?
No, I'd keep the money and spend it on my life.
Okay, fair enough. So you're not interested in the...
No.
Well, that's fair enough, because he only needed to sell a dollar at a time and created that incredible board. That person then went on to go and make the Calm app.
What's the Calm app?
It's like one of the biggest mindfulness and meditation apps on the planet right now.
Wow.
Very, very clever man.
Because looking at that picture does not make me calm.
That's probably why he made it. But of course, we have one final person. We're going back in time a little bit. And I think all of these people at Odd Money Makers Anonymous are just going to give this person a huge round of applause. Hello, my name is Victor Lustig.
Hello, Victor Lustig.
This man is one of the greatest con men of all time. Same thing around the World War era. The Eiffel Tower was around. People were finding it very difficult to paint it and maintain it. It was rusting.
Mm.
So this was sort of appearing in newspaper articles around France at the time. And this con man who's been conning people for years has this really good idea where he's going to try and sell the Eiffel Tower to a scrap metal company. Of course, he doesn't own the Eiffel Tower, has no affiliation with the Eiffel Tower, but he's very good at convincing people to give him money.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, he finds a person and charms them up enough and gets all the legal papers because he manages to find someone on the inside to forge the documentation of the Paris, you know, official. He says, give me, you know, an upfront payment now and we'll put in a good word and you'll get the job to get the scrap metal from the Eiffel Tower. He scammed this person out of $70,000.
Jeez.
This person that he did that to was so embarrassed that he never pressed charges or told the police because he's like, I cannot go up to the police and tell them this guy tried to sell me the Eiffel Tower.
And I believed him.
Yeah, what are you going to do? You know, I would take that to my grave, absolutely.
Yeah. Money makes you stupid.
Money does make you stupid, but the people who have figured that out are very clever.
Oh, so smart.
But we've learned there's too much of this stuff in history now where people go, I'm not falling for that.
Well.
But then again, there are people who, you know, get scammed on Gumtree all the time.
Exactly.
I'm so sorry to those people. This must have been a very difficult episode for you to listen to.
Well, you got scammed.
No, we're not talking about that. It's a hard episode to make. Well, that is episode 2 all sorted. Once again, did you have fun?
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about the guys that just made up the racing.
That is one of my favourite stories from one of my favourite podcasts. If you want to hear a way more in-depth version of that, go check out Sports Bazaar. They do a really good episode on it.
No.
Okay. But that's for another podcast. Don't go there until you've listened to this one. Well, you're already at the end, so... Thank you. You can go listen to it now.